I want to start this morning by talking about one of the greatest religious marketing campaigns of all time. So look at this picture. Do you recognize the Mizpah? Anyone? The blessing? May the Lord watch between you and me when we were absent from one from another. Anybody? Yeah? How many of you had a half a heart? Yeah? And in our community, it was not uncommon for us to share the other half with our best friends or our best friends. Because, you know, nobody ever really knew who had the other half of the heart. So we were kind of safe and sharing our hearts that way. But here's the thing about this Mizpah. Jacob and Laban, we're going to be hearing more about Jacob this morning, but Jacob and Laban had been enmeshed with one another for 20 years. I'm not going to try to catch you up on that whole story. You can go back and look at the book of Genesis. Jacob had lived with Laban for 20 years, had served him for 7 for his first wife, 7 for his second wife. There's all this stuff. But now Jacob has taken his wives and his children, his flocks, and he has left Laban in the middle of the night. And Laban catches up. So the entire reason that Jacob left and took his wives and took his children, and his wives were Laban's daughters, but the whole reason he took his wives, took his children, took his flocks, is that Laban has repeatedly cheated and lied and manipulated him. And so now Laban has come after Jacob and his wives and his flocks and all, and has caught up with him, and basically they have a little bit of a reckoning. Now, these are not two people that really love each other. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff. And Laban kind of says, and these are my own words, like, I don't trust you as far as I can throw you. And I'm not certain that as soon as you're out of my sight, you're not going to seek your revenge or do more terrible things to me or mistreat my daughters or any of that. So I want you to swear an oath right here that you won't mess with me anymore. And they swore the oath, and Laban says, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another, so that we don't, you know, do this to one another anymore. And somehow that got turned into this lovely jewelry. And may God keep God's eye on you while we are absent one from another and all this. So it's a great marketing thing, but it does have to do with Jacob, so I'm starting there. So this awkward reunion between Laban and Jacob, after Jacob has left, was followed by another awkward reunion. Jacob, as he's escaping Laban, encounters his brother Esau. Do you remember this story? Esau, from whom he had stolen the birthright of the firstborn. So, I mean, this is a scary situation. Jacob's not sure how Esau's going to respond. But just to move this story along, here's what I want you to know. Jacob prepared gifts to give to Esau and everything. Let me pass. I'm sorry for what I've done. And what Esau says to his brother is, brother, don't worry. I have plenty. I am fine. Keep your gifts. Pass safely. So that worked well. And Jacob went on and he established himself and increased his flocks. And, you know, Jacob had all these sons, but he had one favorite. Not that any problems could come from that, but he has 12 children, and one is clearly his favorite. And when this favorite, Joseph, was 17 years old, he often tended his father's flocks. And so when he was tending the flocks, he was working for his half-brothers, okay? Jacob's other sons by other wives. But sometimes when Jacob went out to work for his half-brothers, he came back and he told Daddy all the bad things he had seen his brothers doing. So there's yet another reason that they didn't care a lot for this brother. So Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph. You know what it is, right? A beautiful robe, a coat of many colors. And Joseph is, he doesn't get subtlety or nuance at all. So he kind of shows off his coat and everything, and his brothers hate him even more because he's the father's favorite. And then it gets worse. You wouldn't think it could get worse, but then Joseph has a dream, basically, in which he is the Lord of his brothers, and they bow down to him. And you kind of keep that kind of dream to yourself, but not Joseph. He tells them, and then they're angry, and then he has another one, and in this one, not only his brothers, but his parents bow down to him. So now Jacob's even a little confused by this son. So that's sort of where we get to. They're not getting along, these brothers. Well, one day, Jacob sends Joseph out to check on the brothers as they're tending the flocks. And here's where the story picks up in Genesis. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said. "Let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns, and we can tell our father that a wild animal has eaten him." But one of the brothers, who didn't hate him quite as much as the others, said, "Let's not kill him. Why should we shed any blood? Let's just throw him in the empty cistern in the wilderness. He'll die without us having to lay a hand on him." But there is some saving grace in this. This was Reuben that said, "Let's not kill him." And he secretly planned to come back and rescue Joseph out of the cistern. But before he could do that, Joseph was beaten by his brothers. He was stripped of his robe. He was thrown into the cistern. And some travelers, a caravan of camels, came down the road. And it was a group of Ishmaelite traders. And the brothers, Judah, one of the brothers, said to the other brothers, "Oh, you know, what would we gain by killing our brother? Here are these men coming, these traders. Let's sell him to them. Let's sell him to them." So they did. They sold Joseph, and then sometimes later, when Reuben came back to rescue Joseph, the cistern was empty. So this is really bad, and the brothers can't really decide what they should do, so they make up a story. They kill a young goat. They dip Joseph's robe in the blood. They take it back to their father. They say, "Look what we found. Do you think this is his coat?" Okay, so the story kind of ends there, and then it's interrupted by another story, the story of Judah. We've talked about this before, the story of Judah, one of the brothers impregnating his dead son's widow, right? There could be no doubt in your mind that this is a really messed up story, right? It's just, all right, so years go by, and I'm not going to go into all the dream stories and everything. I hope you'll look in the book of Genesis if you're not familiar. But years go by, and Joseph, who they sold into slavery, has become the leader of all Egypt. He is second only to Pharaoh. And the reason he's gotten to this high position is because Pharaoh had some dreams. Remember this? That there were going to be 7 years of plenty, and then there were going to be 7 years of famine. And Joseph interpreted those dreams for Pharaoh, and basically Pharaoh said, you know, do whatever you have to do to get the land of Egypt through the 7 years of famine. So Joseph collected from the plenty and everything, and he's in charge, and everybody in Egypt has enough to eat now during these famine years. But all around, people were starving. Joseph has prepared Egypt for the great famine, but all around, people are starving. Joseph's father and his brothers are suffering from the famine. So Jacob hears that there is food in Egypt, and he sends his sons, all except the youngest, Benjamin, he sends his sons to Egypt to get food. Well, when the sons get to Egypt, who do they have to go before to get this food but Joseph? And Joseph recognizes them. They don't recognize him. Joseph recognizes them, and he messes with them. I mean, you've got to read the story. He accuses them of being spies. Why are you really here? I don't think you're here because you want food. I think you're here because you came to spy on us. He throws them in jail. He keeps them there for 3 days. Finally, he decides, I'm going to send you back home, but I'm going to keep one of your brothers as ransom to make sure that you come back. And when you come back, I want you to bring that youngest brother that you didn't bring this time, because I'm not sure there really is a youngest brother. All right. So they go back home with all the food. They get home. They're opening their sacks. And there in the tops of the sacks with all the food is all their money. This could be bad, because it could look like they had stolen the food. So they know they have to go back. They have to go back anyway because their brother Simeon is still in prison. And they beg their father to let them take the youngest one with them, Benjamin. And Jacob's like, no, I've already lost my favorite son, Joseph. And now I can't lose his brother, Benjamin, the child of my own age. But the brothers say, you know, if we don't do this, we're going to starve. And so there's a whole bunch more stuff. And then they take their younger brother Benjamin and they go back to Egypt with twice the money that they think the food would cost, because they want to make up for the money that was still in their sacks. They're going to retrieve their brother Simeon. They hopefully are going to get food. And they come before Joseph again. And this is where we're going to pick up with our scripture this morning from the 45th chapter of Genesis. This is what happens when they come back. They're standing in front of their brother, and Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Send everyone away from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer, and he said, "I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen and you shall be near me. You and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And now your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my own mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father how greatly I am honored in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, while Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. Now, eventually, Jacob learned the story and was also reunited with Joseph. This was another awkward family reunion. And everybody was there. The huckster, the plotter, the schemer, the father of 12 children by 4 different wives, the impregnator of his son's widow, the brothers who plotted the murder of their father's favorite, the father's favorite, the one who had been in prison, the trust fund babies, the children no one had known about, the one who worked for the government, they are all there. Tell me you haven't seen them at your own family reunions. And I just have to, I wrestled with myself whether I was going to say, all these people are always at all the family reunions. You know who's not? The gay ones. Oh, my gosh, we can't have the gay ones. All right, that's just an aside, but all right. So all these people, and we're some of these, too, you know. So, all right, this is an extraordinarily awkward family reunion. And I know that most of these characters are in your families. And though this is a huge story with huge implications, I can't hope to do it justice in 20 minutes, so I'm just going to say 3 things. First, there will always be awkward family reunions. And I'm not talking about just the kinds in the park or the church fellowship hall or the American Legion with the t-shirts. I'm also talking about the human family reunions. I'm talking about when the human comes together, Uvalde strong and New Orleans strong and El Paso strong, and Fly Eagles Fly, and the Ohio State family reunions. The families united by tragedy and by celebrations. The Pentecostal families and the Presbyterian families and the Muslims and the Mormons, the reunions of the human family that include all the people, the helpers, the comforters, the price gougers. This human family is constantly reunioning. And it's a mess. And I don't have time this morning, but you're going to hear me talk a whole lot more about these human family reunions and what I believe Uprising's role in them can be. 2, in these stories of the human family, who do you want to be? I want to be Joseph. Not perfect by any means, but when it comes to it, full of mercy. You know, this is a complex topic. Mercy, forgiveness. I always feel it's my responsibility to make clear that you do not have to accept abuse or neglect, that you do not have to maintain family ties at all cost. In a minute, the quartet's going to sing a Stephen Schwartz composition called Forgiveness Embrace. And you have got to hear these lyrics so that you can really appreciate the song. So I'm going to share them with you here. I have served a full life sentence as a prisoner of my past, as a victim of a victim of a victim. Seen my parents' parents' parents left traps that held me fast, and they still catch me even when I think I've licked them. Well, I have blamed them, I have fought them, but I never understood. All they really did was did the best they could. Is there a way to rise above if I look at them with love, though I look at them full honest in the face? Can I make my peace at last with the pieces of my past and enfold them in forgiveness's embrace? I forgive my poor, flawed parents for the things they could not be. I forgive my valiant lovers for not completing me. And the hardest thing of all now, I forgive myself the sin of not being all I planned and all I thought I should have been. If I look at them with love, though I don't deny that harm has taken place. I can make my peace at last with the pieces of my past and enfold them in forgiveness's embrace. And thing three, you know, you can't just take a big eraser and get rid of some of the sweeping results of this story. There's a huge famine in the land. People are starving. The rich and powerful take advantage of the situation to amass more land and put more people into slavery. That still happens, right? We see price gouging in crises. We see all kinds of missteps. We see governments step in to use tax money to alleviate suffering, and we see aid withheld. All these things are true. And I would never ask you to ignore them. In fact, I think your Geiger counter for human suffering should be the most sensitive instrument in your body, in your heart. So when you wonder, when you hear these things, should you march? Yes. Some of you see injustice and you have to march. Some of you see injustice and you have to pray. Some of you see injustice and you have to turn away because it's more than you can take today, because your beloved is dying or can't remember who you are, because your child is being bullied. Here's what I want to say, because you're here in church. You offered yourself to this morning. If your Christianity is part of your political platform, if your Christian faith is part of your life philosophy, if your Christian faith is one of your core values, you're going to be in and out and in and out of rage and terror and malaise and dependency, and the Pharaoh and the famine will always dominate your story. We tell these ancient stories. Here's the thing about this morning's story. You know who is not the main character? Even though he's the one with all the power? Pharaoh. Pharaoh is not the main character. Joseph's family are main characters. Joseph is a main character, but the only reason we even tell the story is because God is the main character. Joseph ends up where he does because he trusts in God. This is a story about faithfulness, about making choices because we understand ourselves to be the people of God. We will still spend much of our lives in Egypt under a strong hand. But this is what I believe the story wants us to remember. When we are in Egypt, under the strong hand, God is still speaking to us, saying something like, "My child, you have blessed my heart, and you have broken it. But never once have I given up on you. Never once did I stop loving you. I know you spend a lot of your life in Egypt under a strong hand, worried about so many things. But I also know that in the midst of it all, you danced and you feasted and you loved. When you were afraid, you drew courage from those you loved, and sometimes they drew courage from you. And you comforted one another. And it was messy. And it was marvelous. But here is my promise. Through it all, I will watch between you and the world. And I will never leave you or forsake you. Amen.